so much for hanging out with us. It is Tuesday night, and I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. I just realized tonight, walking into the station, that our days are numbered here in the Tribune Tower. As I was walking up the loading dock, there are some guys working on the building. They're moving a lot of the duct work, a lot of the electrical work in the building. They are now working on the 22nd and 21st floor. I don't know, like, I feel like they're coming closer and closer. If you've listened to the show or the station during the day, you'll know that a lot of us are losing our parking spots. And you know what? There's worse things in life. Things move on. You have to, move forward. And the building has been sold, and we now are starting to kind of feel the real implications of that. So I'm trying to take more pictures of the building. Please come down and see the Tribune Tower the way it is now, the way the lobby is. Representative Robert Martwick joins me in the studio. He's the representative for the Rootin' Tootin' 19th District.
Rootin' Tootin'.
The Fightin'. What do you prefer? I think Footin'.
Rootin' Tootin'.
Rootin' Tootin's
we're
good.
The Rootin' Tootin'.
Because we're fun. You know, and if you tussle with us, we might tussle back. That's all.
That's right.
Now, when you come in, do you notice those inscriptions in the lobby about the freedom of the press and the First Amendment?
I spend an awful lot of time reading those and trying to take them in. As you know, when I first arrived here, waiting for security to get me into the studio, I spent a lot of time reading those, and they're really, they are very inspiring, and they speak so much to the important role that journalism plays in a democracy. Right? It is such a crucial part of it. Everyone wants to, you immediately look at politicians for successes and failures in government, but they forget about the important role that journalism plays, because journalism holds politicians' feet to the fire, but they are also how regular citizens get informed. And so when journalism fails and you have an uninformed electorate, that's when they make bad choices.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is that there, and the support for journalism is, coming under such fire. Really, the suspicion, and not even suspicion anymore, the complete dismissal of what journalists do. And I have to remind people all the time, I'm not a journalist. People think of me as the media. The media and journalism are two different things. The people who are out there asking the who, what, where, when, why, and how. Sometimes how. I can't remember which one it is. It's all the W's. And that tells you, again, that I'm not a journalist. I don't know the specifics of it. I am a talk show host. This show is based on conversation. It is often based on my opinion. And we keep it open for conversation. Like last night, we were trying to invite people to call in and tell us, to walk us through why they support Donald Trump. And people were texting us and saying, well, why should we when you have your agenda? Well, that's the thing, is, one, I don't have an agenda. I honestly, Representative, I've looked for it every single day. I cannot find my agenda. I don't know if you have found your agenda or if you know what that looks like, but I have my opinions, and I have the luxury, really, with this show, to share that, what I'm passionate about, what I believe, what I find important. What I find important is making sure that people feel safe. And that, and honestly, that really is why I came to Springfield in 2015, the day that funding was cut for the Autism Program of Illinois, for Epilepsy Foundation, for Meals on Wheels. I felt these people are no longer going to feel safe. They are going to lose hope. And that's why I showed up in Springfield. And that is really absent of politics. That is, what are you doing? And that's how you and I developed a more, professional relationship, talking about what's going on. I'd met you 6 years ago pretty much for the same reason. Mm-hmm. When I came down there for the first time to talk about ABA therapy and insurance and what it covers for individuals with disabilities. But when it comes to journalists, it's so hard right now, because, people really are so suspicious and so angry. But at the same time, there's a job to be done, and people keep showing up to do that. And the same thing for politicians.
Yeah, I think politicians are kind of used to people questioning their motives or questioning, the job that they do. It's a new spin that it's now been turned around, and people are questioning the motivation of journalism, right? Which is, again, I guess, from a profession that has had to deal with it to one that has not, what I would say is, as you said, sort of marshal on, right?
Yeah, just keep showing up.
Just keep showing up. Yeah. Keep doing your job. I think that the the liberation comes with the light, right? The liberation comes with the light. So yeah. the more journalism shines light on the things that are going on, the more that they allow people to be informed. You can lead the horse to water. You can't make them drink. If some people choose not to be informed, if they want to sit with their preconceived notions, if they don't want to engage in respectful debate, hey, that's our system. We have it's a free country. You can do whatever you want to do. But for those who are thirsty and they want to take a drink, you keep providing the information and let them make up their own mind.
And that's the thing is, I guess, stay thirsty, my friend. Stay thirsty.
Stay thirsty.
Well, you and I have had long conversations about what democracy means. And democracy means having elections not always turn out. I mean, someone's going to lose. You're always going to have a situation where you don't get everything you want. And that is like life. Democracy is like life. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, democracy is, I think, of all the choices that are available, of all the systems that are in the world, democracy is the one that works for us and we still believe in and we invest in. I have questions about it. I mean, that's the point too, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's the worst form of government there is, and it's the best one that we've got. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's inefficient and it's slow because it allows everyone with different opinions to have a say. And you know, this is something we've talked about many times on this show is Governor Rauner's seeming inability to understand, for a guy who's so smart and so successful, that he seems to be unable to understand how the basic function of democracy works, which is, and I say this all the time, in a democracy, you don't get what you want. If you get what you want, then it's not a democracy, it's a dictatorship. And you're the dictator, which is good for you, but not for everybody else, right? And in our democracy, I get elected, but then friends of mine, like Mark Batnick, who's been on the show, Steve Anderson, who's been on the show, David Harris, who's been on the show, Republican representatives, they get elected with a very, very different viewpoint than mine.
Right.
And so in order for us to get anything done at all, that means we have to be willing to compromise on the things that we want and accept some of what we want and give some that to what other people want so that we can find a position to move forward. And that's where Governor Rauner, and I've always said this has failed, is that he refuses any form of compromise.
Have you gotten a sense, because people have asked me this, have you gotten a sense of where Governor Rauner is coming from? Because I've watched him for 3 years and I really could not tell anybody. Again, going back to the day that funding was cut for the autism program of Illinois to then supporting HB 40. I mean, those are things that are very strange to, you know, for conservatives, you're like, yes, we need to make cuts and everyone's going to suffer, even if it's the kids or the disabled or the senior citizens. But at the same time, conservatives are very against HB 40. For those of you who don't know, is protecting the reproductive rights of women, including funding for choices that women make.
Right.
And that's really confusing for people. Do you have any sense of where he's coming from?
You know, I think that if I were to speculate, because I don't know, I think that Governor Rauner truly believes in the very, very conservative principles of trickle-down economics.
Okay.
That if you were to strip away all of the regulation and lower the taxes, that there would be this incredible expansion of the Illinois economy and that rising tide would lift all ships. So what he says is, if we have to make all of these cuts and people suffer and people die, which we know during the budget impasse, there are literally specific examples of people who died because they were not able to access the services that they had been accessing in the past. So he makes these decisions and he looks and he says, yes, but the ends justify the means. If we do this and we cut out all of this stuff and we have this boom in our economy, then all of these people eventually will be taken care of. And if we had to lose a few along the way, well, then that's worth the end goal. And I think that's what he believes in. I disagree with him 180% or 180 degree different view than he has.
And I've seen you say as much on the floor of the House of Representatives, fight very vocally for people for babies who are on life support, for families who really benefit from unions, for the working class, really.
Right.
And I know that you disagree 180% with what he stands for.
Right. And again, I don't think that we are, we're not he is not going to get the state that he wants, right? And so a wise man would enter the office of governor and say, well, there are things that I want to do that will move things closer to my vision of an economic utopia. And I will take that in baby steps. I will take that in increment. And he wanted all or nothing. And it just wasn't going to happen. And I think that's been his failure. That's just my thoughts.
Yep, and that's why you're here, for your thoughts. It's not just your thoughts, it's your thoughts. And when we come back, there is something else that has developed over the term of Governor Rauner's administration, which was medical marijuana and what qualified as symptoms that would qualify someone for receiving a prescription for medical marijuana. And now you guys have taken a step in another direction, which I would not have imagined 3 years ago you would even consider legalizing marijuana in the state of Illinois. So I know hearings were held today. Let's talk about that when we come back. Listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio on Michigan Avenue. Joining me is Representative Robert Marwick from the Rootin' Tootin' 19th up on the northwest side, including parts of Jefferson Park, Portage Park, Harwood Heights. Is that all our neighborhoods?
Yeah,
yes, that seems like
Gladstone
everybody.
Park.
Oh, yeah, that's,
Dunning.
That's right, Gladstone Park.
A little
Park.
Bit of Elmwood Park.
Yeah. Oh, really? I didn't know you had Elmwood Park.
Yeah, I do.
Those folks.
That's
all right,
a great precinct.
Really. It is.
One precinct at Elmwood Park, and it's an awesome precinct.
I hear they have an excellent New Year's Eve party coming up on the on New Year's Eve of all times.
A New Year's Eve
party? A New Year's Eve party. Two New Year's Eve parties, as a matter of fact. We'll be at the Filament Theater. It's going to be me, comedian Paul Farvar, and Rob and the representatives. There's going to be a 7:30 p.m. show, all family-friendly, till 9 o'clock, 7:30 to 9, and then an adults-only show from 10 p.m. until whenever we leave, whenever they kick us out, Rep. I'm just saying. I'm not sure.
Sounds like fun to me.
It's going to be a blast. And we have gotten to know each other over the last few years, and because you are my representative, and I've gotten involved in what's going on in Springfield. And for many reasons, I've been really tuned in to the conversation, to the debates, to the really the arguments over not only legalized marijuana, but also legalizing medical marijuana, but also legalizing recreational marijuana. The governor was extremely hesitant, if not contentious, about certain criteria for being eligible for medical marijuana. I mean, they're epilepsy, I believe, cancer patients, PTSD finally made it on the list. But that was a battle back and forth for years. And that's unfortunate for people who really do benefit from medical marijuana. Now, the state, you guys are taking a step forward and saying, hey, you know, maybe we need to listen to this conversation about legalizing marijuana as a on the recreational basis. What happened today?
So today there was a joint hearing, a joint legislative hearing between the Senate and the House, and the subject was, it was a subject matter hearing, meaning no votes were cast, but it was to listen to testimony about potential economic benefits of legalizing marijuana for recreational use. So Illinois, did, as you mentioned, passed a medical marijuana law. I was a co-sponsor of that and voted for it, obviously. We have the, as you alluded to, the strictest set of medical marijuana regulations in the entire country. Very, very, very strict. Very, very limited circumstances in which people have access to medical marijuana. And yet, we have seen great benefit from that program. It has been a very effective program. It's helped a lot of people. And it's really been a positive for the state. Now, as in the time that we passed our medical marijuana law, there are now, I can't remember if it's 7 states that now have passed recreational marijuana legalization in one form or another. California just did it by ballot initiative, so that's going to happen in California. We heard testimony today. I was specifically interested in the testimony from Rick Steves.
I saw that.
Who appeared. What a lot of people are like, well, you're the travel guy. Why
yes.
are you? And what they don't know is that he was very active in the legalization efforts in Washington State. And he brought about his at least his experience traveling the world and seeing the way different countries and different states treat marijuana and the successes and failures they've had. So he offered some very interesting testimony. But the most interesting testimony, I thought, came from a legislator, a state representative from Colorado, and an economist from Colorado that works for the government, that talked about their implementation and the successes and failures that they've had in Colorado. And the interesting thing was that this state representative, well, the two most interesting things was that this state representative who appeared before us was opposed to the initiative to legalize marijuana.
Initially?
Yes. And now it was there to tell us about all the good that it's done and try to give us the benefit of, you should do this, but don't make some of the mistakes we made. You can even do it better, which was really fascinating.
They have hindsight.
Yes.
Yeah.
Rick Steves offered that his governor was adamantly opposed to Washington legalizing marijuana, and yet now 4 years into their program, he is quite comfortable with it. He would not work to get rid of it because they have seen a marked decrease in their prison population, which means less. Not only are they reaping the benefits of tax revenue, but and there is no evidence to suggest that there is increased usage of marijuana. Basically, what's happened is the people who were marijuana users who were obtaining it illegally are now obtaining it legally, which means regulation, means revenue, tax revenue for the state, and it means less money that they're spending on a prison population because they're not mass incarcerating people for doing something that was illegal and is now legal.
What brings the legislature, the General Assembly, to even have these hearings? Because when I was there first in 2015, I remember Representative Will Guzzardi just pretty much being laughed off the floor of the House of Reps for even wanting to have a study done. This is just 3 years ago. So I'm curious as to how you're now, and that was just a study to see what it would be like to legalize marijuana, a study. And now you guys are talking to folks from around the country, if not around the world, about this.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Illinois can be very, despite the fact that we are considered a very progressive state, we never seem to be the head of the spear. We're always sort of following behind.
Okay.
And, you know, it happened with medical marijuana. There were so many more states that offered medical before we did. And, I remember at the time, when the bill was first proposed, it was my first year in the legislature. And I was actually opposed to medical marijuana. Not that I was opposed to people having access to it for medical purposes, but to me, I thought that the way that we were drafting the law was just a way of creating a protected cottage industry for a few winners that we would pick. We were going to create this law. We're going to say, and I think it's actually happened, which is we said, oh, okay, how many people have applied to be distributors? Okay, pick a bunch of them, pick five or six of them. Okay, you guys all get to become millionaires, and the rest of you don't. Okay, and who wants to sell the stuff? Okay, make your applications for your licenses. Okay, we'll pick the winners, and then the rest of you, no, you don't get it. And I don't agree with that. I just really felt like we should be honest about what we were trying to do. Now, I think I was wrong in the sense that it was a legitimate medical marijuana program that we passed. I think we did, unlike the one in California, which was a joke. That was a joke. That was not a real.
Yeah, people are still angry about that.
Yeah, but we did a good program. But you know, to me, I thought that this would lead down this path. I agree with you. I didn't think it would come this fast. But again, we're only exploring it at this point. There's some bills filed. We'll see what happens.
All right, more about that when we come back. And if you have thoughts on medical marijuana or marijuana being passed as a recreational drug in the state of Illinois, we have listeners all over the world, by the way. So we'd love to hear from you what your thoughts are. 312-981-7200. Do you think Illinoisans should be able to get a little high, I guess? I mean, that's the thing. I mean, it's hard to say.
They already can. It's just a decision.
They do. Yeah, they already do get high.
Well, they already do. And
they get drunk.
They get drunk. And they
use opioids. And there are studies that say that this is a way to wean people off of other addictive substances. listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. We are hanging out with Representative Robert Marwick. He represents the 19th District, the Rootin' Tootin' 19th District, up on the northwest side. That includes your Portage Park, parts of Elmwood Park, Gladstone Park, Jefferson Park, Harwood Heights, and on New Year's Eve, we are going to be doing a New Year's Eve show featuring myself. I'll be hosting the event, and we'll also have comedian Paul Farvar Esquire. I'm the only person on the show. You are the head of your band, and Paul Farvar is also a comedian, and you guys are both lawyers. I feel like maybe I should go to law school before I host this
show. Before the show, yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, it's Crash Course.
Yeah, I guess so. Is there such a thing as Crash Course? I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't know. No, probably.
You also have an event coming up. We're going to go back to talking about legalizing recreational marijuana, but you and Senator Mulroe, who is also my senator, are having an event to talk to people about their tax assessment.
Mm-hmm.
And property tax is something that people talk a lot about in the state of Illinois and how high our property taxes are as compared to other states. And I think that's one of those things that is just, it's tangible, right? People can look at their bills and go, and they can compare it to other states, or they can Google it and go, how much are the property taxes in Indiana and how much are they in Iowa? And obviously there are ads right now that Governor Rauner is running, laughing at the people of Illinois and laughing at, you know, Speaker Madigan and saying, ah, you chumps, thanks so much for sending all these jobs to Indiana, Wisconsin. I think it's Iowa. Maybe is the other place. And there's a lot more to that, though. You know, one of the things that people don't realize is that in the state of Indiana, CEOs earn 317 times what the average worker earns. And in the state of Illinois, and the average earner, their wages have flatlined over the last several years, whereas in the state of Illinois, wages continue to grow because of the role that unions play. And so these are things I don't think people take into account.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt, again, you know, each where you've got a country like ours where each state has its ability to act its own laws and act its own economic policies and, you know, structure its government so that you can have a very conservative government right across the border from a very liberal and progressive government. So there's definitely some disparity. You know, the argument that I've made for a long time is that, certainly Illinois is going to be a high tax state. We're going to be a high tax state for a while yet because we have such profound financial problems. They're not going to go away with magic dust and a wish, right? They're only going to go away when we address them, and that means we're going to have to raise the taxes and be responsible and pay down our debts. But one of the things I've always advocated for is make our states more like our neighboring states. So you see Governor Walker from Wisconsin up there saying, oh, thanks, Illinois. And I say, oh, yeah, right, except your top individual income tax rate is 7.65% and ours is 4.95%. So you've got high taxes too. It's just that they have a different system. So they have lower property taxes, higher income taxes. That's something that I think we should be looking at in Illinois. We should be trying to restructure ourselves so that we more closely resemble our neighboring states, be more efficient, pay down our debts. That's the only way we'll ever get back to being a well-run, efficient, and then ultimately a low-tax state.
Well, that's what's so hard right now. And I know that we're not talking about the federal level necessarily, but a friend of mine was talking to me earlier about how, you know, there's this GOP plan, this tax bill that will possibly be voted on before next week. And it's interesting when you think about it, when you go, you know, they're saying that if we cut the corporate taxes, then they will reinvest in corporations and build more jobs, which is interesting considering how much it's being sort of flouted right now that flaunted right now that we have the lowest unemployment rate in 17 years and the stock market is the highest it's ever been. So how much more successful do corporations need to be at this time is kind of the question I guess a lot of people have.
Yeah, and, you know, again, that gets back to this sort of this whole philosophy, which is, you know, where do you think it's the best way to grow the economy? Certainly, there's no doubt. I don't think anybody would argue that growing the economy is a good thing, right? Everyone would say absolutely. So the only question then becomes, well, how do you do it? And of course, my friends on the right, my colleagues on the right, they believe by and large that less regulation and less taxes will mean reinvestment. I'm sorry, I'm somewhat cynical. I have a different philosophy. I think that if you take the wealthiest people in the world and you give them a tax break, they won't reinvest it. They'll hoard it. And we've seen it happen, right? It has never actually worked in practice, but that's okay. I
keep trying.
It is their philosophy. I believe bottom up, middle out. I believe if you take the people at the bottom and the people in the middle and you make their lives better, meaning you grow their wages, you give them security, they will drive the economy by spending discretionary income. $1,000 or to a middle class worker means way more than $1 million to a billionaire. And so that $1,000, the person in the middle class is just itching to spend that.
Yes.
And if you take everybody in the middle class and they spend that money, that will drive the economy. So that's what I believe in. Again, I'm sure my colleagues on the right would say that I'm crazy, but that's the nature of our system, right?
Those in the lower, you know, the lower spectrum of, you know, earnings, every dollar they get, they're going to spend.
Yes.
In the middle class, like you said, anything that you get that's extra, you're going to spend on your kids, you're going to try to put away for retirement. But that's, you know, I always wonder, I mean, it's, and I guess this falls into people going, well, what do you want rich people to do? It's not about redistribution of wealth. It's about, you know, about giving people more opportunities and more access to wealth.
Yeah. And it's, you know, again, the whole idea of redistribution.
It's hard for us to say, isn't it?
Redistribution of wealth.
Yes.
Listen, that's our whole system is based on that, right? I mean,
it all has to go somewhere.
Well, right, right. You know, like I say, you know, we have people say, well, we're a capitalist society. I say, well, no, we are a capitalist economy, but we are a much more socialist government than people think. Everyone thinks, oh, that's a dirty word. You shouldn't say it, and that's fine, but we have elements of socialism every day. You go out, I'm looking out on Michigan Avenue. Welcome to socialism.
Yes.
Because the reason I say that is that there are people who don't pay anything for the maintenance of those roads. And there are people who pay an awful lot of money that goes into the maintenance of those roads. And guess what? The person who pays a lot doesn't get any more use of the roads than the person who doesn't pay a nickel. That's the way government works, is that we tax people based on their ability to pay, whether it's flat or progressive. We're going to take more from the wealthy and less from the poor, and we are going to create goods that everyone has equal access to. So, you know, that's the nature of our country. It's the nature of what we do. So when we're moving the tax system around, when we're changing numbers, when we're saying, should we have a progressive tax or a flat tax, it's not about whether or not we're changing the system entirely. It's minor tweaks to try and be more efficient, to raise money, and to figure out who benefits and who pays more. Right?
And when we say that we're taking more from the rich and less from the poor, we're taking more, you know, as far as the sum, but not necessarily the percentage, because that was something that Warren Buffett said, as far as how much he pays in taxes percentage-wise compared to what his assistant might pay or his secretary. He pays more fundamentally, and less as far as the percentage of what he actually has, which is fascinating.
Every tweak to our income tax system that has been made since the 1950s, everyone has sweetened and sweetened and sweetened for the wealthiest. And that's why you see with all of these loopholes and exemptions that the wealthiest people in our country, I mean, there was one year where Governor Rauner made, you know, whatever it was, $50, $60 million in one year, and he wound up paying an effective tax rate of about 11%. Well, I'd like to pay 11% in taxes. I don't. I pay a lot more than that. You pay a lot more than that. Everybody pays a lot more than that. So there's something that's fundamentally wrong when the wealthiest can pay the lowest tax rate.
I remember I was working with Lewis Black. He was in the Chicago Theater, and someone yelled at him about, I don't remember. It's always amazing to me when anyone has the gall to yell at Lewis Black.
And I wouldn't.
And it was because I've known Lewis since he started, like, not since he started, but when he started working in Chicago in 1999, the first time I worked with him, we had a very small crowd. There were maybe 30 people. And you go from that to the next year, the next couple of years, you know, working crowds of, you know, 300, then 500, then 1,200 at the Skyline Theater at Navy Pier, and then working with him with 5,000 people, and then working at the Chicago Theater. And this woman has the nerve to yell at him about taxes and government, and he stopped the entire show to talk about when he was a struggling comic, how he had to sweat and worry about paying his taxes, and now he has all these people that are like, you don't have to pay that. We'll make sure that you have to pay as much as you owe. And he sweats it because he's like, wait a minute, how was it harder for me when I was poor, and now it's easier for me to keep all of my money? And he sees that. I mean, one of the things that, you know, people who come from nothing and see it or pay attention to it along the way have value in it. And those who don't, are, I don't know, able to manipulate it in ways that we can never imagine.
Well, and that's, you know, again, that is the big argument, really, is it comes down to one simple word, fair, right? What is fair? And, I think that there are a lot of people right now in the middle and the bottom thinking, wait a minute. If someone makes millions and millions more than they could ever spend in a lifetime, how is it that they can pay a lesser percentage of their income in taxes than I do? That's not fair. And I think that, again, you know, that's what it's about. What we're trying to do, what our arguments are about, is what is the fairest way to assess taxes so that we can run a government, not accumulate massive debts, provide a good level of service, and do it in a way that is fair.
Excellent. Well, you know, that's what it comes down to, is what's fair. And it's so hard, and that's so slippery and intangible for everybody, because for everyone, something seems fair and unfair when they see someone else getting something that they think they don't deserve or they want, you know. And that's
what our whole system of democracy is about, is to try to decide, you know, what do you represent? Who do you stand up for? What is the, you know, what is fair? And you know, we have, again, I try never to cast aspersions upon the intentions. Like, I disagree with Governor Rauner fundamentally on so many issues. I really don't think he's a bad person inside. Some of the things he's done, I would never do myself. But I think that in his heart, he believes that what he's trying to do will make things better. I think he's really off base, but I think he really believes in that. And so when we have these discussions, it's, you know, we're trying to figure out, how do we make the system best? And we're all bringing our own experiences and opinions to that discussion.
Listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. Joining me is Representative Robert Martwick from the Rootin' Tootin' 19th District up on the northwest side. And you have turned in your signatures for your candidacy. How does that work? How many signatures do you need to turn in Springfield?
So, and a lot of people find this, they're surprised. They're like, yeah, but you're the incumbent. Why do you have to do signatures? Well, in our system of democracy, you have to reapply for your job every time you're up for election. And for us in the House of Representatives, that's every 2 years. So the calendar is pretty crazy if you think about it. So I won in November of the last time I ran, would have been November of 2016.
A year ago.
Well, yeah. So November of 2016, I won my election, my re-election bid. In January of 2017, I was sworn in for my new term. And by August of 2017, I was, or actually early of September of 2017, I was beginning the process of collecting the signatures, the petition signatures, to get my name placed back on the ballot again, right? So, like I said, I just won the election in November, got sworn in January. By September, I'm already circulating petitions for the next election, because the primary is March of 18, and then the general is November of 18, get sworn in January of 19, start circulating petitions September of 19. So it's, you know, you're constantly going. But yeah, we, as representatives, there's a certain number of signatures you have to get. So in the House of Representatives, we have to obtain 500 signatures.
Okay.
that are of registered voters in your district, and they are subject to challenge, so you want to turn in more than the minimum. So we have a minimum and a maximum, maximum being three times the minimum. So we are allowed to only turn in 1,500 signatures, and out of those 1,500, 500 have to be
legit. And they have to be able to check them, which is making sure they're registered. They'll ask sometimes whether or not they'll go and ask those people, do you remember this person coming to your door and asking for your signature?
Yep, I know a certain situation like that.
It's fascinating. Mm-hmm. And is it all door to door, or can you like go somewhere that's busy, like let's say outside of a train station?
You can collect signatures from wherever you want, but for what we do in smaller districts like that, it really makes no sense to do anything other than door to door, because if I go to the Jewel, it could very well be somebody shopping at the Jewel that doesn't live in my district, so that's not a valid signature for me. When I go to the doors, I'm going to people that I know are voters in my district, and it gives me an opportunity to connect with them at their home, see them, talk to them, tell them what I've been doing, answer questions, and get a signature and get myself back on the ballot.
Yes, Rob?
Yeah, I've got a question.
Sure.
Always love when Robert's in studio.
Hey, thanks, Rob.
Let me ask you this. You too. You know, you talked about the cycle, and a lot of people aren't aware of that, and it's pretty daunting for you guys. And I know you're back in Springfield doing good work, but do you find if you were to tack on an extra year, let's say, congressmen and women, a three-year term might ease some of that pressure of you guys always working the cycle?
You know,
You see what I'm getting at here?
I mean, I do.
Like you guys
do.
Again, you're working hard, but...
Yeah, and so the Senate, the Illinois Senate, obviously, they have a four-year term.
Right.
And we have a two-year term. A three-year term, I don't know how you do it, because then you'd have odd-year elections, and that would just be... that would be very expensive to have an odd-year election.
Sure.
I think we would want to stick within the cycle. So the question is do you extend the House to match the Senate terms of 2 and 4 years? There's really no reason why you couldn't. What I would say is this. I think that there is a benefit to House members. We have half the size of the district as the Senate. And I think more people know their state representative than they do their state senator, because of the fact that with such short terms and constantly being on that cycle, you have to be out there all the time. You have to be going to events, meeting your constituents, knocking on doors.
Sure.
And I think that helps you connect. So I think there's a positive to it. It definitely is a lot of work, I'm here to tell you, but I think there is something good about it. I don't know what the answer is, you know, which way would be better. It is hard to be campaigning all the time, but again, I think that helps you keep your pulse on what your constituents want.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
What a great answer. I mean, people probably expect you to say, yeah, I'd love to be able to only do every 4 years, but there's something to being out there, you know, meeting and greeting all the people that live in your district. Listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. A long, long, long time ago in a previous life, I used to do extra work on a lot of films around the city of Chicago, including Love Jones and My Best Friend's Wedding. But when I got a call asking me to be an extra in the movie Hell Cab, I was really excited. One, it was a Chicago play. It was all by Chicagoans. And also, I am the daughter of a cabbie. So my dad would always have these stories about all the creeps that got into his cab and all the funny stories he had, the people he met. And that is the story of Hell Cab, of all the adventures a cabbie has through the course of their day. I don't know. I love the show Taxi. Did you watch the show Taxi, Representative Martin?
Yeah, absolutely.
That did a great job of capturing sort of, you know, everyone back at work and what it was like with the dispatchers and the bosses. But Hell Cab is just the story of the cab driver. And joining us in the studio are Summer Austin. We have Molly Lyons and Rusty Schwimmer, all in the production of Hell Cab. Summer, tell me about why did you guys decide to do Hell Cab and in this sort of incarnation of it?
Well, first of all, Rusty knows Will Kern. And so Will Kern reached out to us and he was like, hey, I think this would be a really good pair for us to work together on the show. And so it just so happens that Will and I had met Rusty a few years ago and had never met Will, but Will and I have all these friends in common. And so it just kind of happened that I felt like it was an opportunity we couldn't pass up. I'm a big fan of the play. It's a great play. When I talked to Will about possibly having a female cab driver, he was like, I know that sounds like a great idea and I would love to do it. And he's like, and I know Rusty and let's do this. So I thought it would be a really cool thing to try something different with it.
It's very exciting.
Isn't it very exciting? And so now we have two female cab drivers actually playing its part. So it's really cool. I'm so excited about it.
So that means that Molly and Rusty switch nights?
Yeah, they're switching.
Oh, here we go.
Yeah.
Look out.
Yeah. So well, it's a cool idea and even more challenging, like with different people, but so much fun.
Well, and I remember like whenever I would get into a cab and there'd be a woman driver, I'm like, hey, I could be like my dad. And that would be weird. But, I mean, the ratio of female drivers to male drivers continues to be smaller in proportion.
Yes.
But when you get a female driver, I mean, like, it's the same experience. They're going to have all kinds of, you know, crazy things. And what a great way, by the way, to bring to audiences what it means to get into a cab today, especially because of the apps.
Oh, yeah.
How is it different, Rusty, with the audiences, do you think, when they are watching this? Because it is more about the interactions than it is necessarily about just a cab, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it absolutely is about the interaction. And this is really a story about the cabbie's bad day. That's really all it is, right? And I really believe that a lot of times because you don't have eye-to-eye contact, unless it's just that rear view mirror,
yes,
they feel like they can tell you all of their secrets.
The back of your head.
Right. Exactly. And they can tell you all their secrets and they're like, phew, I can say anything I want to in this cab. And it's never going to leave. It's like your hairdresser, it's like your manicurist, it's like your
bartender.
Yeah, your bartender.
Yes.
Exactly. Exactly. So
yeah. Molly, do you still get in cabs or do you use Lyft or Uber?
I use Lyft.
Okay.
I rarely take a cab anymore.
Me neither. I have daddy issues, so that's totally different for me. I do. I get into a cab and I'm like, you're not my daddy. And I get very upset about the situation. But
if that were the case for me, I would never be able to get in a plane. But that's a whole different story.
Wow. So. Yeah. But do you find that even with Lyft drivers, you tell, like, I just told my Lyft driver the other day my real age. Like, nobody knows my real age. I don't know why I said
why?
That. Because I was talking about going to a lifeguard reunion, and I said how many years it's been since I was a lifeguard, and he said, if you don't mind my asking, how old are you? And I told him my real age.
Wow.
I know, to my Lyft driver, not to anybody else.
And did you say, don't tell anybody?
It was kind of like a relief to say it out loud. Like, even, it was, like, I'd never say it at home. I don't say, you know, being in the show business, we can't say how old we are.
Oh, I do all the time. I'm 55.
All right. She's like mad about 55. Get over it.
Yeah, right?
It's happening.
Yeah.
It's happened.
It's so happening.
Well, it's our story, Molly, isn't it?
Well, I actually think that in today's world, in 1992, when the play takes place, it's about the weird passengers that get in the cab.
Right.
Today, for me, it's about the weird drivers that show up with Lyft. I stopped taking Uber because every single one of them was weird AF. And I was giving them all one ratings. And they would have to answer me and go, we'll never send that person to you again. No, you won't.
Yes,
I think the drivers are weird. That's the risk for me getting into cabs because anyone can be a driver now.
Yeah. That's true.
Oh, and they do tell me their life story when I go into a Lyft.
Really?
It's the other way around. It's flipped.
I need less talking. Representative Martwick and I one night had a Lyft driver who had decorated her Lyft. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
She had like vines and stuff and like a candy basket and lights under the seats.
Yes.
Yeah, we were just
What kind of candy? Did it have Bitto
licorice
honey?
And small? Yeah, I don't know if it was... If you like Bit of Honey, I might have some in my drawer in the bed.
Shut up.
I am not kidding you. All right, I have bullseyes. You know, let's take a break and find out what kind of candy I have in my drawer.
Okay.
More after this, we are hanging out with our friends from Hellcab. Summer, what are the dates and what's the website people can go to
for
more information?
The website is weareTheAgency.org.
Mm-hmm.
And the dates are running now through, we just today we're announcing we're extending the show.
Yay! Congratulations. Yeah.
And so we're running through December 17th with Rusty, and then Molly's going to take over the show and run it through the end of December, December 30th.
While I drink eggnog.
Excellent. As you should. As you should. So go to weartheagency.org for ticket information for Hell Cab running through December 30th. More for this on 720 WGN. Pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me are some of the stars of the current production of Hellcat, running through December 30th. You can go to weartheagency.org. The play is at the Den Theater over by there. It's is that a Milwaukee?
That's right. It's in Milwaukee. It's in Milwaukee. Over by there.
Pauline. Thank you so much.
Over by there.
Over by there. Yeah. Just that was my dad would always say. Come on, your dad said over by there.
It's like three blocks down from the sausage shop.
And they say, that don't go by me.
You can't get there from here.
Yeah.
Just saying. Just not for nothing, Molly. Not for nothing. Molly, are you from Chicago?
I'm not.
Okay. Then our apologies all around. Our apologies.
It's okay. I'm from Seattle, which has its own kind of weirdness. Don't worry about it.
No, and a kind of wonderfulness. I mean, every region of the country, I think, is fun and unique. Yep. What brought you to Chicago?
Work.
Work.
The theater died in Seattle. Sorry, everybody. Oh. But it's true.
Oh, no.
I was taking care of my mom. I was watching her die, and I was watching the theater die, and I went, where am I going to go? My friend's here, and went, come to Chicago. So here I am.
Yes. And I have to say, I mean, I've never been a part of the theatrical scene. I'm a stand-up comic by trade. But, I mean, the kind of work that we put into what we love doing and the audiences that you have, too, and Rusty, you must know this, too, is that there's a having performed in Los Angeles and being on, you know, sound stages and things like that. Yeah. There's something about a Chicago audience that is delicious, I guess, is the best way to put it.
They almost talk back to you, you know, which is really fun.
Almost. Yeah.
Almost.
They almost. That's the thing. It's like, it's almost like the side, like you can feel them wanting to.
Yes.
But they don't.
Exactly.
Which is perfect because in New York they do.
Yeah, it's true.
And in L.A., they're too laid back.
Oh, in L.A., they're like, wait, what? You know. Wait, what did you say? Wait.
It's true. And the small theaters, and Representative Martwick has a theater in his district as well. He has the Gift Theater.
Oh, great theater.
Which very much like your theater group is about all about run and gun. Like, this is what is important. These are the messages and the stories we want to tell. So I love that you guys are doing Hellcat. We have a listener who wanted to join the conversation. Hey, Matt, how are you doing tonight?
Hey, Patty, it's Matt, the Uber and Lyft driver who gives out free pizza.
I'm asking for you, dude.
There you go. Yeah, there's no way to request an Uber or Lyft driver, is there?
Yeah, no, I'll mail you a card and just let me know 24 hours in advance and I'll drive you to the airport. Anywho, so here's my story. I drive both Uber and Lyft. I do not patronage Uber. I've just had too many drivers on Uber that have given me really terrible rides.
Interesting.
It's just that simple.
Wow.
I've had driver. It's like 100. It's 94 degrees out. The guy's got his windows up, doesn't turn the air conditioning on, and when I ask him if I can roll down the window because he's got it locked, he doesn't speak any English.
Oh boy. Yeah, that's not a good. That's not a good feeling.
Or they smell, or being an Uber or Lyft driver is the easiest job to have on this planet. I do not understand how people can mess it up so badly. But there is a bright spot to being an Uber and a Lyft driver. I listen to literally nonstop WGN radio.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Yay.
So I hope you guys have a great rest of your day, and maybe you'll get me as an Uber driver.
I appreciate that, Matt.
And I'll give you free pizza.
I appreciate that. Have a great night. Be safe out there, all right?
You too, Patty. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. We got to go see Hellcab. This is something that I've been so bad about getting back out to see theater. It's been like crazy. But every time you guys do a production, I mean, you guys are just all heart, all passion, and I love what you do, Summer.
Oh, thank you.
And what has this been like? What has this process been like with the Hellcab?
Well, I mean, this has been such a great experience because I think you guys would agree with me that every single person working on this show is such a nice person.
Yeah, they
and
are.
A sweetheart.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, really.
It's a jerk-free zone.
It really is.
Except for Molly and I.
Yeah.
We're
total jerks.
Good thing that you take turns then.
That's perfect.
Yeah. And it's been so much fun because it's very for us to get the play to happen was a little challenging. We had to get a cab, and as you know, the play takes place in a cab,
right?
And so we had to get a cab up a second story into a second story theater, which was really fun.
And this is the cab from the film.
This is the cab from the film.
Yes. You're telling me this off the air.
Yes. And we actually found an auto body shop, Eric's Lehigh Auto Body, that helped Woo-hoo! Us out.
Thank you, Eric's Lehigh Auto. Is that in Evanston?
They're in Chicago.
Okay,
they're
yeah.
fantastic people, and they saved our lives with this. It was great. So
didn't they disassemble it?
They disassembled yeah. it. I mean, yeah, of course you have to get it. Basically, I think it weighs about 100 pounds now with everything taken out of it.
Oh, stripped down.
Mm-hmm.
Everything inside the doors, whether it's...
Yeah, the chassis, everything, all the engine parts, gone.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but it's reconstructed in a theater. So
do you don't have the roof of the car.
We don't have the roof because that would make it
hard
really
to see.
Impossible to light.
Hear.
To,
yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And okay. No windshield because of that the lighting issue. And no windows either so that everyone can sort of hear their cues. But other than that, and we don't need the trunk either, so
sure.
Everything but that. It's like, as the car guys were telling me, it's about a three-quarter clip.
Okay.
That's what we got.
That's good. You got your three-quarter clip over there.
Yeah, all right, that's right, a three-quarter clip.
That's fine. Rusty, when did you move to... Were you born in Chicago?
Yeah. I grew up in the north suburbs, and I was always going into the city and taking the train into the city, like, forever. And as soon as I graduated high school, I took a nice little gap year at a college, and then I moved into the city. And then I moved into the city, and so I had been in the city, you know, from the time I was 18 and until I went to Los Angeles. And yeah, so
what made you decide to move to Los Angeles? You're like, that's where the work is?
Yeah, or, that's exactly it. I just, all I was doing was waiting on tables here, and then I was little fun fact, I was a refrigerette. A cheerleader for Refrigerator Perry of the Chicago Bears.
Oh, come on.
Season. Yeah.
Hey.
And, yeah.
I remember that.
I do, too.
And that was, like, the only gig I could get, you know? So I was like, I'm a fat broad in a cheerleading outfit. I want to do something more. And
let's move on from this. Yeah.
So I went to Los Angeles, and that's it. But I came back here as soon as I could.
I when I saw you at an audition, I really had to swallow my tongue and sit on my hands. First of all, not just like grab you and go, oh my God, I loved it when you were with Suki and you were her doula. And from Gilmore Girls, sorry, Rep. I don't think that's going to be a point of reference for you. But I mean, there's a lot of other things. I mean, so many movies and television shows. But what was remarkable to me, because I'd always questioned whether or not I should have moved to LA. I never got a lot of work in movie and TV, different career path. But when you were talking in that, just those few moments, you were relieved to be back here, though, it seemed to me.
Yeah, because my day-to-day life there was not a day-to-day.
Right.
It was always in limbo. And I just kind of wanted to have more of a day-to-day. And I missed my family like there was no tomorrow. There was a lot of things that I missed. I missed graduations, I missed funerals, I missed weddings, so many things. And after a while I said, well, you know, I don't need to do that anymore. And it's been lovely because I get to keep working anyway. And I was on location a lot anyway.
Right.
So it wasn't as if I had to be in Los Angeles anymore because I'd be going...
Sure. And they know who you are now. I mean, you know, right?
Yeah, they kind of know my face. Yeah.
There's so many things I'm like, wait, because I've always wanted to do, and I know that they did a special on this or like a documentary of like that guy from that thing or that woman from that thing. I mean, you have that that sort of catalog of films and television. I've wanted to do a segment on the show, you know, that you know her from that thing.
Right, and there's a lot of Chicago actors that are like that.
You do that. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Dave Asquezi.
Yeah, I was just about to say Dave Asquezi. Yeah, exactly.
So many of them. And when you, Molly, when you moved to Chicago from that theater scene in Seattle that was kind of on the demise, what were you most surprised by when you came here?
I think the, well, two things. One I hated and one I loved.
Oh, fair.
The thing I hated was no one here gives a fig about what you've done outside of Chicago. Okay. So I have a big, long, lovely international resume, and everyone went, oh, but you worked with Steve Scott. Oh, well, that's different. Then come on down.
Okay.
But the thing I love about it is it's a real community, and there have been a lot of disasters and a lot of losses and heartbreaking stories in the last few years and some really ugly stories in the last few years. And this community comes together in a way with huge love and embraces one another and helps people and gives money to widows and widowers and orphan children and dogs. I gave money to someone whose dog needed surgery. But also, last year, I worked all year and never once auditioned because it was like, oh, even some of the gap times got filled with, hey, we lost somebody in this show and so-and-so said that, you know, you might be really good for it. And I went, oh, okay, should I audition? No, you're here. We're offering you the part.
Nice.
I like Chicago a lot.
And that says a lot for what people have come to know you as, you know, as a performer, as someone to work with. I mean, that's really what it often comes down to, you know, talent gets you in the door and then your reputation. And I'm glad to hear that Chicago is kind of, well, we are kind of like that, aren't we, rep? We're like, if you know somebody, hey, I got a guy.
People talk.
And we're pretty close-knit, I guess. And it's I'm glad that you were able to break through that. Because it's not that hard to get through it, is it?
I had a dear friend who has a big name, and that opened the doors. I had to do my job.
Right.
For sure. But it did open a lot of doors.
I'm glad this door is open. Yes.
How good? I mean, so I've been somewhat involved with the Gift Theater out in Jefferson Park, which I really love. And I hear much about how Chicago has become sort of the premier storefront theater capital of
oh, absolutely.
That's true. Yeah.
I mean, there's such good stuff going on. Is that, how does that work for you? Is that something that you enjoy? The fact that there is this great scene of these storefront theaters doing great work. One of the things I know at GIFF, they did a world premiere of a David Rabe original play.
Yes, I was the assistant director on that show.
Were you really?
Oh,
nice.
God, that was wonderful.
It was wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was great.
And it's just amazing to see the works that are going on and that all these small theaters really thriving in Chicago. How does that, I'm curious, Rusty, like what is that experience like for you to come back here from where you've been out in LA? And
yeah, it's I think the thing about Chicago is we're such a blue collar town. Mm-hmm. And so with being a blue collar worker, you're a hard worker. And pardon me, I believe that the Chicago actors are just really hardworking actors. Mm-hmm. And because they're hardworking, they just want to work. They just want to do this. They don't care about being famous. They don't care about their image. They don't care about that. They just want to do good work.
Yeah.
And I think that translates to our theater. And it's both good and bad. It's good because you have great quality work here. But it's bad because the actors here sometimes don't feel that they deserve to be paid more or to be treated better because they're like, no, I'm just going to, you know, put my head down. I'm going to work. But sometimes what I think is that they should be paid more. So
they don't know their worth.
Right. They don't know their worth.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, and one of the things, so now, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm going to segment a little politics now since what I do.
Do it.
You know, one of the things that I'm really happy about is that Chicago has a growing number of small theaters that are choosing to be equity theaters.
Yeah.
And so they're saying we value our staff.
That's right.
We value our actors. We value our ensemble.
Mm-hmm.
And we want you to have good pay and benefits and a good life.
Living wage. Know?
That's right. And so I'm really proud of that. That's one of the reasons I'm really happy to be associated with the GIFF because they do a great job there.
pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me is Representative Robert Martwick, who is now surrounded by some of the top performers in the city of Chicago. How are you doing, Representative?
I'm loving it. This is great. You know, I grew up with four sisters, so I'm very comfortable here. This is like, I feel like I'm at family dinner.
Well, we have the stars of Hellcab. We have the stars of Mommedians of Momedy. I'm going to get this right, Kat. Ken Herskovic joins me in the studio. Tell us what you're doing with the Mommedians of Momedy.
So the Mommedians of Momedy is a group of some of Chicago's funniest comedians who just happen to be moms. And basically we're producing shows that feature all mom comedians, because I feel like there aren't a whole lot of mom comedians in the city, and so it's just kind of giving us a chance to highlight some mommedians. And our first show will be happening a week from tomorrow, December 6th, at Davenport.
At Davenport. And who's on the show?
So we have, there's three of us co-producers. There's Colleen Brennan and Denise Medina, who they're both here. Say hello.
Hello.
And we also have Jessica Besser Rosenberg and Leah Berman and Jan Slavin. So we have
a lot of moms. How's it not any mom of moms in comedy?
I know. It's true. And the great thing about the show is also that we have moms everywhere from me, who my child is still unborn.
Could happen during the show. You don't know what's going to happen.
True. And I'm hoping.
That's surprising, everybody.
I'll bring a tarp just in case.
Yeah, as I guess. The front row should also bring a tarp.
That's true. Ponchos.
Like Blue Man. Exactly. Yes. You never know what's going to happen.
It's true. But we have everyone from, you know, my baby's going to be due in January, and then we have moms of toddlers and all the way up to a grandmother. So.
Oh. I'm sure grandma likes to hear that. All the way up to grandmother. These are the stages of momedy. It's very cool. So it's December 6th at Davenport's. Where can people get ticket information?
They can get tickets at davenportspianobar.com.
Davenportspianobar.com.
Yes.
All right. Sometimes I can repeat things very well and not say them back the right way. I'm just like, wearetheagency.com is where you should go for tickets for Hellcab.
.org.
Okay. See, told you. Couldn't do it. You know what? I wrote it down wrong. I'm going to tell you right now. I wrote all the words down. I knew I was going to get something
wrong.
Summer Austin. Did you direct this one?
I did, yes.
Yes.
I know.
How many performers do you have in Hellcab?
I think there are. Okay.
Because you took the audition and I didn't get a chance, and I'm sorry about that.
Maybe another time. Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's 15 plus?
Including Swing, too.
Well, yeah, so there's 34 characters, I believe, besides the cab driver. 34 or 35. Oh, and then everyone's doubling or tripling.
Right.
So I think it's 14 or 15, and then we also have 6 understudies, so it's a big cast.
It's a big cast.
Yeah.
There's a lot of personalities, and it's a no-jerk zone. Are you sure?
No jerks.
Wow. Well, except for Molly.
Except for us. Yeah, well, there's that. But you get to do that. Yeah. Everyone's getting in your cab.
That's why we sit in the front seat.
Yeah.
I mean, boy. Yeah.
Okay. Now, that's something that my dad, because he was a cabbie for 50 years, are there any characters that try to jump in the front seat at all?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad, my dad would not let me ride in the front seat as his daughter.
Wow.
I was not allowed to. I mean, it freaked him out. He just could not, unless I just was not allowed to ride in the front seat anymore. That was very strange. I mean, he had all this like paperwork. He would always keep stuff there, so it wasn't even an option for passengers. But hey, Pat, get in the back. I just wanted to sit next to my dad.
Oh,
all right. I'm fine.
Are you sure?
So what happens when the driver? What's the name of the driver, by the way? What's your character's name?
Cab driver.
We don't say it out loud.
Driver. The driver. All right.
Never say it. We did name our cab Tallulah.
Yeah. Oh, fair enough.
Yeah. We did.
My dad's first cab that he owned was a Cadillac. Was a livery, so he called it Caddy.
Mm.
So that was Katie. That was actually Katie.
Katie. Mm. Yeah. Katie the Caddy.
Katie the Caddy.
Yeah.
Exactly. So when people try getting in the front seat, like what's your reaction? What's the feeling that you have when someone tries to get in the front seat?
Because,
well, the cab driver, I don't know if we're giving anything away. But we don't like to be touched.
Oh, yeah, no.
Yeah.
Oh, you're not giving anything away.
No.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's fair of anybody. I don't like to be touched.
So,
especially a female cab driver in 1992.
Yeah.
Sure.
Exactly.
So far, few between.
Mm-hmm. That's true. And that was the beginning of rehearsals. I said, because it's a cab driver in 1992, shouldn't she have a baseball bat?
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Well, my dad had a baseball bat. I always wondered, though, because it was in the trunk. So, I mean, like, what was he going to do with a passenger? So, like, unless he was, like, getting his suitcase out of the back. He always had a baseball bat in the trunk. I never understood that.
Maybe he wanted to hit a few balls.
Well, he was a baseball player, but, I know.
Right there.
Yeah, what does the cabbie do in between? What's the inhale cab? Does a cabbie ever get a chance to pull over?
Well,
and take a break?
Well, I think we just, can I say we can go potty?
Yeah,
go potty.
No, absolutely. Yeah. Say so you can go potty.
And moms are here, so I said, go potty for you. Yeah, we can go potty in the hotels, get some coffee.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Good point.
There it is.
That's what we do.
Yeah.
It is a dark day for this cab driver,
It's a
though.
Dark yes. day.
It's the winter solstice, actually.
Yeah, December 21st.
Yep, so it takes place on December 21st, 1992.
Yeah.
So it's the longest night of the year.
Good times.
Good times.
Longest night.
Especially for this one. And then during the holiday season, too.
Yeah.
If there was like, I'm still going through the emotional up and downs in this play.
So the play is not really. Long, we want to be. I just realized I made it sound like the play.
The play is not long.
Mm-mm.
No.
It's a long night.
I didn't know.
Right. Yes.
Now they have a full size cab that they not full size. It's a three-quarter clip.
Yes.
Which Eric's Lehigh. Yeah. Eric's Lehigh Auto Body, and they are in Niles, okay. Chicago.
And isn't Carol?
Carol is the owner. Yes. Thank you, Carol. They saved our lives with this cab. Also her father, Eric, also, and he is from Germany. So they have a German restaurant as well. So it's pretty.
Really?
Yeah.
What's the restaurant?
Lincoln Square. I'll have to look that one
up
for
you.
Summer's like, I wanted to make sure I got the auto body shop in. I wasn't going to be responsible for the restaurant as well.
It's okay.
I have some other fun facts about them, but I don't want to get them all wrong. I don't want to get locations wrong. So
if they want to join in for the cast party, the wrap party after those shows,
so
I know we need to do that. I know we did one for one of your productions, and we've done two productions.
Oh, they're
a wrap party for after the show. The run is over, and we talk about what happened during the run because things happen that even the director doesn't know happen on stage. Those little moments of someone's cell phone going off, which happened during the Mark Roberts
New
movie.
Country.
Yeah. And it was so awkward because I was afraid it was my phone.
Oh.
And it came in a moment you thought that it was actually part of the sound effects. But then we saw somebody in the audience across the way, because you can see the other side of the audience, trying to put it under their thigh. And but things like that, at the Gift Theater when they were doing Grapes of Wrath, somebody, a water bottle just rolled across the stage and they all had to pretend like nothing had happened. So these sort of those sort of weird moments, but also the things that you find during the play that were unexpected.
I pulled the ignition out of the car the other night.
Oh, there you go.
You
pulled the ignition out?
Yeah.
I was pulling the keys out for one of the few scenes when we get out.
Sure.
To go talk to someone.
Yeah.
And I pull the keys out and open the door and something goes flying by me. And I said to our fabulous ASM Alex, I went, Alex, something fell out of the car. Just as I ran on stage. And then as I was running off, I said, in case you didn't hear me, I'm gone. And then I went to put the key back in and I realized,
it was just a hole.
It was the ignition.
Yeah.
That's what it was.
That's fantastic.
I did find it on the floor later, so I didn't kill any actors.
And you have to say in it. You have to be that totally was
supposed to happen. And there's some people get in and out so fast.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
That was my biggest concern was that I inadvertently would cause another actor to trip.
Oh no.
Yeah, because we don't really leave the stage. That's the only time we leave the stage, but that's for 3 seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
and we don't leave the stage. But there were a few gasps the opening weekend, and I'm thinking, did one of the actors gasp? But it was an audience member. They got very into it.
I'm still getting into it.
Yeah.
I love it. Well, everyone should get into it at the Den Theater over by there at Milwaukee Avenue. What's the cross street over there?
Division and North Avenue.
Do you get a chance to hang out afterwards and talk to the audience, or do you just kind of rush?
We do that. You have a couple 2-3 cocktails afterwards.
Yeah. It's a good place.
The Den has an actor's bar, a great bar.
Sure does. They got a couple 2-3 bars.
They do. They got some good stuff over there. Yeah. I gotta have you guys in for a rock. I know that Rusty, you're gonna be in the production through December 17th, and Molly will be taking over through the 30th. We'd love to have you all back, and so I'm so excited for this production of Hellcab. Again, we are theagency.org for ticket information, and of course we always love having you guys in the studio. Summer, congratulations on
this. Thank you so much for having us.
Oh, my pleasure. Let's get a photo before you go. I gotta get a picture with all y'all.
I got a face for radio right now. So
I got face in radio hair.
You totally have radio.
I'm gonna throw something at them.
We have
right
the same
now.
Hair. Look.
I know. I was like, did they cast us in the hair?
We're this actually looking for a project to do together.
You absolutely should.
Absolutely.
We'll write it. That's how you know how Chicago is.
How about you guys write it?
All right. Yeah. We can write. We can write that.
Sure.
Hey, I just saw 3 billboards outside of Ebbing, Missouri, and I'm destroyed.
Oh.
So I'm ready to write something because I'm like, I've got all the feels. More after this on 720 WTN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Joining me is Representative Robert Martwick of the 19th District, the Rootin' Tootin' 19th, just the Rootin' Tootin'. You broke down and had a little bit of candy. I won't tell anybody. That's a huge candy basket. Again, thank you to Jimmy Rio, the Indiana Society of Chicago. Do you know there's actually an Indiana Society of Chicago? They all live in Chicago, but there's 3 requirements that belong to the Indiana Society of Chicago. You have to either have lived in Indiana, gone to school in Indiana, or maybe its own there's a third thing, I can't remember what it is. Maybe worked in Indiana? I don't know. Born, lived, or graduated from an Indiana university. And those are the criteria.
And
they live here.
And what's the point of them?
They have been around for a very long time. They're very proud of being in Chicago, but not in Indiana anymore, I think.
That's something.
It's something. And we're going to have them on tomorrow night again, as a matter of fact. So they'll be in the studio. They do a lot of fundraising. And the point is they gave me that huge basket of retro candies. So that's all the deliciousness that you guys have been enjoying.
Mm.
That's all from them, including like your bullseyes, your bit of honeys, your sugar daddies.
And these, whatever, I remember these being called, like, Delpha rolls or
no
something.
No one knows what those were. What is that?
It used to be called, like, Delpha roll or something like that.
That's the only candy I did not recognize in the whole basket.
I'm all about this.
Yeah, I have no idea. Where are you from, Kat?
From Michigan.
Okay, maybe it's a Midwestern, maybe?
Maybe it is. Maybe it's
a
good old Detroit thing.
Maybe. Does your family still make chocolate?
Yes. And actually, can I plug it real quick?
Yes, you can. And then I'm going to go to news and we'll plug Mommedians at Mommedy.
This is the first year I'm not working the one-of-a-kind show, which is December 7th through 10th at the Merchandise Mart. But you can stop by and see my brother, Daniel Herskovic, and my sister-in-law, Tamara Herskovic, who is also pregnant.
Oh, my gosh.
And you can go and buy some Mayana chocolate from them.
Excellent. So where is this again? This is December 7th through 10th.
At the one-of-a-kind show at the Merchandise Mart.
Go to the one-of-kind show, and there's going to be chocolate. That's all you need to know. I mean,
Free
samples of exquisite chocolate. And the name of the company is?
Mayana Chocolate.
Mayana Chocolates. Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Riding sidecar tonight is Representative Robert Martwick of the Rootin' Tootin' 19th District. That's right. And on New Year's Eve, you can catch us at the Filament Theater. Go to eventbrite.com and search for my name, Patty Vasquez, the New Year's Eve celebration at the Filament Theater with comedian Paul Farvar Esquire. We have 2 shows. The first show at 7:30 is family friendly, and I assure you it'll be family friendly.
Of course.
Children are, and I decided to do this because of all the moms who who never know what to do with their kids on New Year's Eve. And I think kids should be able to celebrate New Year's Eve and have fun. Kids 12 and under are free. And everyone over 12 is $22. So I've made it an affordable event for families.
How
am I making money? I have no idea. I've decided it's a party for the neighborhood.
Darn right.
Yes.
How are kids going to be able to celebrate New Year's Eve?
We are going to ring in the New Year with Argentina. We are going to have a live broadcast of the celebration in Argentina because at 9 o'clock it will be their midnight and we will celebrate New Year's Eve. We're going to have party, the sound makers. And we're not going to give them the sound makers until just before because otherwise it will be an hour and a half of everyone tooting their horns and cranking their stuff. But there'll be, all the hats and the crowns, and we'll have all that stuff going on. We have music from Rob and the Representatives.
I hear they're pretty decent.
I have heard they are pretty decent as well. Well, I'm trying to figure out, we're also going to interview some of the kids in the neighborhood and get to know a little bit more about the kids who are growing up in Portage Park or from wherever they come in the city. By the way, kids must be accompanied by an adult because my concern was once I started making the flyers, it said like 12 and under free. I'm like, wait a minute. I know. I'm a mom, and the Mommedians and Mommity know where that's going.
You see that trick. Write this down.
Wait a minute. 12 and under. Hold on a second. I'll be down in the street at the bar, at the restaurant. We have in studio with us Colleen Brennan, Denise Medina.
Yes.
Funky Cole.
Yeah.
I see. I got that right. And Kat Herskovic in studio. They are performing on December 6th at Davenport's Overbite Air. And you can go to davenportspianobar.com for ticket information. And, that's the thing about being a mom. And I've said this before. I've said that, being a mom is the world's greatest sorority with the worst hazing ever. There's a certain amount of amnesia. And we don't want to scare Kat at all. Because she's going to deliver in January. And
I'm ready.
Are you ready?
I feel pretty ready. Like, I'm not that scared of the pain part.
Okay, sure. Live there.
Yeah, I'm going to stay there as long as possible. But I got to say, I got to get off these Facebook mom groups because I'm hearing way too much.
What kind of things are you hearing too much about?
Like, I didn't know that there's a chance that the baby could get stuck.
Been there.
Yeah. So while pushing? Yeah. I wasn't fully dilated, only one side. Yeah.
Wait, is that possible?
Yeah, it's also possible, yeah. So only one side. Yeah.
So you had like a hemisphere?
I didn't have a full moon. Fully rounded. I pushed for 2 hours and 5 minutes.
Oh my God.
I'm so sorry. I was in labor for 22 hours, over 22
hours.
That's
a long time, yeah.
Yeah. I'm fine. Yeah. And I have another one after that. So it's all good. So you couldn't have been that. Representative Martwick. Were you? Okay.
I was in the room.
Were you in the room? Okay. So here's another. So when you guys were delivering, did you have the father in the room?
Yes.
Yeah. Was he up by you or did he go take a peek?
He was on the north side.
Yeah, the north side. Yeah, the south
for
side.
For sure. He was in it now.
It's dangerous.
You got to stay up north to keep the mystery alive, you know?
Did you go look?
So when I got there, my wife said, no, I want him up here. And the doctor said, no.
No.
She said, he's going to help. And I said, how am I going to help? And so my job was to hold a foot and a knee.
Oh, her foot and knee.
Yes.
Okay, I was going to say.
Right? Because they don't do the...
So did she have her foot on your shoulder? Did she have your foot, her foot? I'm sorry, I have to act this out for some reason. Did she have her foot on your shoulder you had to hold?
I held her foot and I held her under her knee. So with one hand under her knee, her bent knee, right? And then one hand I held her foot and she would push against that. So there was the nurse on one side and I was on the other and we would, so when the contractions would come and she would have to push, we would push back against the knee and the foot.
This is very involved.
Yeah, but
you were looking. You had no choice but to look.
It was there.
Yeah. No, I think Steve went down to look for a minute, because I was pushing for 2 hours and 5 minutes, he went down there and he goes, there's his head. Oh, it's gone. I prairie dogged the baby. So... you're fine. Don't worry about it, Kat. You'll be fine. You'll be totally fine. I think my favorite part was when the nurse came in. She goes, want to do some practice pushes? There's no practicing, just so you know. It's like, say, you know what? Practice running your head against that wall. Just at full speed. Just. It is the best thing I've ever done in my life is being a mom, Kat. I will just say that. It's the best. I've never, my value as a human being was nothing before I had my boys. I mean, that's just the way I feel.
Yeah, I gotta say, I am really excited. I was a little freaked out at first. I probably don't look like the type of person that plans things such as this. But I am really excited, and it's great for material.
Yes, I can say that I became a headliner after I had it. I did. I was like a middle act, and all of a sudden I was a headliner. I mean, so I don't want to freak out Kat, but wouldn't you say, when you guys had your kids, almost forget what it was like before you had kids.
Oh, yeah.
There's sort of this amnesia.
I'm just starting to remember, though, because my oldest is 17. Uh-huh. So now we're starting to do things that we did before we had children because we can.
What is that like?
It's weird. Yes. It's like going into outer space and then returning to Earth.
Okay. Yeah.
And I'm back on planet Earth. And I'm still trying to get to know the place. It's been a while.
Right, because you're not.
See, that's I'm a 51-year-old first-time father, so I'm just shot out in outer space. I have no chance of returning.
No, and I hope that when you splash land, I hope that you don't die on impact. Just don't want to implode. Do you have any advice for Kat? Is there anything you guys have told her?
Just to be flexible.
Yes.
Just to roll with it, because sometimes you're going to have an idea of how things you think they're supposed to go.
Right.
And the best thing you can do for yourself is to really just kind of relax a bit and be flexible. And I don't know. I was going to say, don't take anyone's advice.
Yeah, don't take anyone's advice. Well, collect all the information. Pick what you like.
Yes.
Yeah. The hardest thing for me as a mom is to tell myself I'm doing a good job, because you're so in it. It's such a constant, like, you know, whether it's grueling or exciting, like, you have to stop at some point and say, I am doing a good job, whether it's just before you go to sleep or when I talk to myself more now than before I had kids. Like, I have to tell myself to do things just the same way I tell my kids to do things, right? I'm like, get out of the car now or go to bed. Like, I'll be sitting on the couch after work and I'll be laying there, like, you know, watching Netflix or something, and I'm like, you have to get up now and go to bed. You have to get ready for bed. I have to say it out loud, otherwise I'll just sit there for another 2 hours. And so will your kids if you don't tell them what to do.
Yeah.
Get up, go to bed. Get up and go to bed. Get up and go to bed. Hi, Kat.
I will clarify my statement. I'm not so scared for the labor part. I am scared for that first month, and I'm scared for when he becomes a teenager.
Wow, you're thinking ahead.
Yeah, I'm not jump that far ahead, but
yeah, I was kind of afraid that when my kids got older and their personalities sort of, you know, developed, that I wouldn't like them. I remember having that fear, like, what if my kid's a jerk? Like, I remember having that fear, like, in the middle of the night when I was pregnant. I'm like, what if he's just a jerk? But they're not. They're not. They're not at all.
Yeah, I never thought about that. Like, is it possible to not? Yeah.
Yes. I think there are people who don't like their kids. Yes.
I think there are.
Yeah.
And I had that conversation when she was pregnant, when we were expecting. And, she was so worried about our child being less than perfect. And she was, of course, worried about some sort of physical problem or health problem. And I said, look, it's not perfect. It's going to be what it's going to be. And I said, besides, if he's born with a health problem or whatever, that's one thing. I said, but he could be a psychopath. He could have, you know, all kinds of problems. And my wife goes, he could be a Republican.
So hardcore Democrats in the Martwick household.
Right.
Yeah. She's more hardcore liberal than you are. I've talked to her.
I didn't think there was any room to the left of me. She found a lot of
She's got all that shit. And she's passionate about it too.
Oh, very, yeah.
That's it. Well, my mother-in-law, my husband's mom, was a Catholic, a liberal Catholic. And there was a point where my husband has five sisters, so one of her daughters was dating a Republican and one was dating a born-again Christian. Now, coming from a hardcore Catholic family and a hardcore liberal, she goes, now, I don't know which is worse, that my daughter, one of my daughters is dating a born-again Christian, or that one is dating a Republican. She goes, no, I know what it is. She's dating a Republican. More for this on 7.9 WGN. It is not the end of the world as she knows it. I know what you're doing there. Kat, it is not the end of the world as you know it, just so you know. My producer is trying to tell you that it's the end of your life.
Yeah, good thing I didn't have my headphones.
It's the end of the world as we know it, and I feel fine. I love being a mom. I've said this before. I think that I wasn't doing anything much important before I had kids. Mike, and the other thing is, how are you getting along with the baby daddies? Is everybody married?
Yeah.
To baby daddies?
Yeah.
I know it sounds weird. It's such an invention of the last 10 years. Are you still with the person you created your human being with? That's a weird way to put it, too.
Yeah, things change for families.
So. Yeah.
But yeah, I'm married, and I'm still married to my husband.
Yes.
And
comedy, that's hard. You know, or anybody. I mean, our divorce rate as Americans is like over 50%.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But yeah, we're still together.
Yeah.
Knock on wood somewhere over here.
I'll find it for you.
I don't want to take it for granted, you know. But yeah, things are going really well. He's very supportive of the comedy, and so are the children, which is very important because they're great. They're just really great, and they're great for material as well.
And did you find out, because this is what I found out, and maybe you guys all realize this at some point, and as Bobby gets older, you'll find out who you are as parents more so than when your child is young. My husband makes me want to be a better person. I mean, the way he is with the boys. But there are moments where you realize that somebody has a different approach to, you know, whether it's education or, you know, maybe reprimanding somebody. You're like, and you have to go, okay, that's how we're doing this, I guess. Right. And you have to, like, give your silent support and sort of go, that seemed a little harsh.
Well, especially in front of the kids.
Yeah,
you can't do it. The issue with it, then you know, when the kids aren't there in front of you, then you can say, hey, what was that about? What's going on? What are we doing? If you really have a problem with it. Otherwise, it's like, well, yeah, okay, we're rolling with this.
And sometimes believe me, there's some slamming doors sometimes. You know, well, especially when you mentioned you're worried about your child becoming a teenager. I mean, Griffin has, everything is literal for Griffin, and we will get into, like, these yelling matches about, like, the stupidest thing. I can't even tell you. So it's, and I'll like, well, you know what? It's time for you to go to bed now. You thought you were going to stay up until 10:30 and watch TV with mommy. Well, now I'm done. And I like, and then Steve's like, was that necessary? I don't know, I even know what we were arguing about.
Yeah. Well, we have decided to have a code word so that we don't, like, undermine the other parent.
Interesting. Can you tell me what the
code word? We haven't. It's a couple of months.
Yeah, you have time. And a couple years before the baby even knows what that code word is. Yeah.
We tag in and out. Like, if he sees me going for it and it's a bad place to get to, he's like, whoa, okay, back out. Well,
yeah.
I'm in now.
Yeah.
So we do good cop, bad cop.
Yes.
Tag in and out.
You have each other's back. That's the thing. At the end of the day,
I have a lot to learn.
Yes. At the end of the day, your kids are going to go away to college, and you two are left with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And just stare at each other like, was that a good choice? Did you like the way you handled that? Is that really?
I'm thinking a lot about that these days.
Yes.
I am too. As you're moving forward and you're thinking of things coming up, I'm looking back going, wow, she's worried about this. Should I have worried about that too?
No.
Like, did I mess up now? Like, oh, I wasn't thinking about that, or was I? I don't know. Now I'm like rethinking it all, but it's too late.
It's too late.
You can't go back. Yeah.
Regret is a wasted emotion.
Yes.
It's not about what you've done, it's about what you're going to do.
I don't sit in it for too long, but every once in a while it's like, what am I doing? Okay.
Okay,
I'm good.
That moment's over. We were talking to the Momedians of Momedy. We have Colleen Brennan, Denise Medina, and Kat Herskovic in studio. I'm saying that right, yes?
Yes.
Close enough?
Yeah, it works.
How do you say your name?
No, it's Herskovic. You got it right the second time.
Sorry, Representative Robert Martwick, who we are freaking out a little bit because our kids are. Kat's, you know, she's still catching up to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, she's in for some interesting times.
Are you going with epidural or no epidural?
I'm going to go with no epidural. I will say my biggest reason for that is I really want that surge of oxytocin at the end, like, from what I hear, when you,
after you deliver
it, yes, when you do it without the epidural, like, you get this natural rush of oxytocin, so I feel like...
I've done it both ways, so I'm trying to remember, but go ahead. So there's a rush of oxytocin at the end that makes you feel elated, or...
Yes. So I'm, like, thinking, well, maybe that's the closest I'll come to heroin.
I missed that. I wish I'd known what to look for at the time.
I think I got a surge of oxytocin when they set up my epidural.
Yeah. Because they give you oxytocin, too. But that's
pitocin,
to accelerate.
Yeah.
Pitocin, yes.
But I think I'm more scared to have a needle go into my spine.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see. I'm going to remain flexible and see how it goes.
There's no easy way out of it. It's
right.
Like getting pregnant is like finding out that you've won the lottery, but you have to have your legs broken in advance.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, oh, yeah, what? I'm sorry, what's going to happen when this is all over?
Yeah.
I there's no easy way out of it. I had the epidural. I preferred not having it, just so you know.
Okay.
Just the recovery. Yeah, the recovery was much easier for me. But plus, I also, it also stalled it out for a little bit for how long. I couldn't focus on how to push. There was a moment where they offered me a mirror. Did Sharon have a mirror?
No.
Okay.
No,
that was weird. Mirror?
You know, the...
They offered, I denied.
Yeah, I would never. I don't even like to see myself eat.
So...
That's great.
Can I tell the
yes.
story? I don't know if I should do this, but
go ahead.
Always
is she listening?
But no,
I'll send her a
so
copy.
She said she wanted an epidural, and so they came in and said, well, we can give it to you whenever you want, but why don't you wait until the pain level gets to a certain point and then do it? And I can't remember what number they told her. The contractions started to hit, and I'm in the room, and so the first contraction hit, and I said, do you want the epidural? And she said, no, I'm fine. And the second one, I'm fine. Third one, do you want it now? No, I'm fine. And I thought, wow, she's going to be fine without it. And then the fourth one hit, and I swear to God, I thought she was going to stand right up on the table. She said, mother of God, get the epidural right now! And I was like, oh, my gosh.
It goes that fast.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it was literally like I ran out into the hallway to get the nurse going, now. And she was, oh, yeah. So,
yeah. Hi, Kat. How you doing? It's amazing. It is an amazing experience. I was actually, I didn't know I was in labor. My water never broke. I was just leaking for a while. That's gross.
Oh,
sorry.
Sorry,
everybody.
I didn't either. When we got to the hospital, even for the longest time, my water didn't break. And when the doctor came down with a needle and said, I'm going to break your water, it broke on its own. And
yeah.
Then my husband said, oh, wow, you're like Moses.
That's fantastic.
And it was the best feeling in the world after that happened to you.
And that's the thing, too, is that we're talking a lot about the delivery and going through all that. By the way, one of the things when I was pregnant, there was a Mother's Day while I was pregnant. Have you gone past a Mother's Day through your pregnancy?
Well, okay, so I found out I was pregnant 2 days before Mother's Day, so I hadn't accepted it yet.
Okay.
Like, I was still in shock a little bit.
Fair
so
enough.
It was, like, a weird emotional day.
So you weren't right. So they weren't, like, celebrating Mother's Day yet.
Right.
So it's been now almost 15, it'll be 15 years next May, and I'm still mad at my husband for not giving me a Mother's Day gift on Mother's Day while I was pregnant. Like, I still hold on to that.
Really?
I guess he goes, you're not a mom yet. So for Father's Day, I bought him all kinds of cool dad gear, even though he was. I'm like, see how this works?
Yeah.
I'm a little bit of, I like shame.
Well, how about push presents?
What are push presents?
That's the thing.
That's the thing.
I already warned my baby daddy.
Oh, yes.
I'm like,
yes, I have the stones of the boys, their birthstones. So for Griffin, I have a sapphire necklace and earrings, and then for Declan, I have ruby necklace
awesome.
And earrings. So you know what a push gift is, right?
Uh-oh.
I hope it's going to be a good Christmas in your house.
Yeah, well, it's been 15 months now, so basically a delivery gift for the mom. So Steve bought me jewelry for the push gift. I didn't know that was a thing. I didn't know how Steve knew that was a thing.
I spent one entirely. Oh, I'm in trouble.
Well, now that we've brought it up, you know, you can't ignore it now.
Yeah. Tiffany's opens in a few hours. It's just right down the street.
It was 15 months ago. It'd be a little late, wouldn't it? No.
She'd be like, what is this for? I just realized I probably should have done this sooner. Did you guys get push gifts?
No, I don't recall. I don't know. I don't think it was a thing when I had my kids.
Yeah.
Well, 17, 13? No.
Yeah, I don't think Steve called it a push gift. He just, it was very funny because, like, it was really nice jewelry, and it's not like something he usually, I don't wear a lot of jewelry. So I was like, what is this? And it basically was kind of like for what you just did.
Oh, wow.
For the thing in the
store. I probably didn't get it because I wasn't very approachable because in the delivery room, I was just like, he didn't know what to do. He's standing there just like staring at me, and I'm like, stop staring at me. Go over there. Stop. Yeah. So maybe that could have something to do with it. I don't know.
I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. I want to thank Steve Burness, who has not been here in a bit, and I apologize. We haven't been able to cross paths, but Steve Burness from the Better Business Bureau gave us a whole bunch of goodies, and I'm sharing them with our guests in studio. I've given them that chapstick is really good, but that flashlight, Colleen, you made a good point.
Yeah.
That's a really good light for comics.
Yeah.
I don't know, Representative Marbrick, I don't believe we've ever talked about this. When a comic is on stage and we need to let them know it's time to wrap up, they get a light, and it could be anywhere from 2 minutes, 5 minutes, and sometimes comics don't acknowledge the light, so we have to like, did you see the light?
Yeah.
There's a venue where there will be somebody in the back with their phone, like doing this, but then you're not sure, are they taking a picture? Mm-hmm. Am I getting a light? Yeah. And then the booker gets really mad because he went past their time. And do you ever have that moment where you're like? Mm-hmm. Somebody asked a really good question. Amanda Cohen posted, when you see the light, Colleen, do you feel relief or disappointment? Or does it depend?
Depends. Typically, I'm disappointed. Because
yes.
There's like, but if you're having a good night, you're disappointed. And if the audience is into it and you can spend more time, it's great. And you don't want it to end. Couple times I've been like, thank God.
Yeah, let's get out of here. Let's end this.
Yeah.
Yeah. I there have been times where I'm like, I think I saw a light. I don't even care if I didn't. How about you? Have you?
No, when I see the light, I feel good if I'm in a good place with my material. Like, oh, I've timed this well. I'm wrapping it up.
Yes.
But then I get sad because then it's time to leave and, you know, you're having a good time. Hopefully everyone's having a good time.
Exactly.
And you're doing your thing and enjoying it. And I'm sad to see that go, but yeah, I'm happy to see the light and knowing that my set was timed pretty well.
I always laugh when they ask me what kind of light I want. They ask you, what kind of light do you want? Which means, do you want a 2 minute or 5 minute light? And you really have to make that decision.
Yeah.
Because 5 minutes could be too much. How about you, Kat? What do you typically ask for?
I usually ask for a 1 minute, but I have short jokes.
Oh, interesting. So, you've set a punchline, right?
Yeah, but if I do have a longer joke, like my longest joke would be like a minute and a half.
I've never, ever been able to ask for a 1 minute light. There's no way I can finish in a minute. There's no way. I'd be in the middle of a sentence like, thank you. Good night. Good night. Good night. 2 minutes I might be able to do.
Yeah. I guess it also depends how long the set is. Like,
right.
I've kind of taken to wearing a watch with a timer on it, but 98% of the time I forget to press start.
I've had it where I'll just have a regular watch and I'm like, I look at my watch and go, yeah, but I don't know what time I got on stage, so I have no idea what this means right now. I don't know. I have to guesstimate.
Well, I justified buying a watch that I couldn't afford because it had the timer on it. So,
but then how do you look at it? Because I have two bits in my act that I built in so that I could look at my watch on purpose, right? So one of them it's when I'm in the stirrups and the doctor tells me to scooch and I lean over and I go, how far are we talking? But it's actually an opportunity for me to look at my watch when I bend over. And the other is my mom at the zoo when we see a Mexican man wearing a shirt that said, we were here first.
Oh, I love that.
Right? And she's like, what time did you get here? The zoo only opens at 8 o'clock, right, or whatever, and that's how I look at my watch. So,
smart.
Because I would see comics look at their watch, and then the audience starts thinking, why are they looking at their watch?
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm like, I have a terrible habit of writing my set list on my hand, and it's even worse now with pregnant brain. I can't remember anything, but I'm, like, so awkward, and my eye contact is kind of sparse anyway, so I feel like it kind of just goes with my awkwardness.
Do you write it on the palm of your hand?
No, on the
back.
Whatever this is called, yeah.
Yeah, sort of the grip. Because I've never seen Carmen Lynch. It never occurred to me to write it here. Because
yeah.
I would write it here, and then that's still kind of weird anyway when you're looking at the palm.
Yeah.
But this makes sense because you're holding the microphone here, and she would have, like, a bullet point of her material.
Yeah. The only problem is when I have a long set since I have such short jokes. It's like my whole hand.
Have you ever written stuff down, Denise? Do you have to write it down sometimes?
No. I've just gotten into the habit of not doing that.
Right.
Just trusting that, like, I'll go over the set list before I go on stage.
Right.
Many, many times I'll pace, I'll walk up, I'll do my set list like on my fingers.
Oh.
I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this. So then if I'm up on stage, I'm like, if I get stuck or lost somewhere, I'm like, oh, I'm here. But I don't do that too often, but I've noticed I do that once in a while, yeah.
Colleen, do you have any? I use note cards now. I'll put them in my pocket. I never look at them again because knowing I have them.
Yeah.
I have to
write out my set list on a piece of scrap paper. Uh-huh. And if I'm producing and hosting a show, I'll strategically place it like on a stool or something, and I will never look at it, but I will have it there.
Mm-hmm.
It's my little security blanket. That and my comedy purse, which is a special purse that I bring to every room.
You have a comedy purse?
It's actually in my purse.
Ooh.
In the other room.
You have your comedy purse in another purse?
Yes, because it's not an attractive purse.
Okay.
So I camo my comedy purse.
Nice.
So
I did too. Yeah. You gotta have your comedy purse.
Yeah.
I think, Jeannie Dugan has a joke about bringing her purse on stage. She's like, I'm from the South Side. I bring my purse on stage.
The flashlight thing is to tell you when you've
hit your time.
We need to incorporate it in the House of Representatives, I think.
Oh my God, that would be amazing.
Be nice, you know? Stop some of the pontificating. Now, can I ask a question? Does the flashlight ever get used? Is it just simply time, or is it ever like, is it ever used as a cue, like, you're bombing?
No, I don't think so. No, that's the audience.
Because we can definitely... Well, see, that's the problem with politicians, is we don't really care about what our audience is doing. We just keep going and going and going. We could use a little cue like that.
Well, and the thing is that, like, then there's after you've gone past. So it's usually view the light at the time you've asked for. So this means you have 2 more minutes or you have 5 more minutes. But then you also... invariably someone will have a signal for, like, now you've gone even past that point where it's just like it just stays on the whole time. The best light I ever saw was in Nashville at the Zanies in Nashville. They have a street light. They have green for most of your set, and then you get yellow when you're getting close. And when it's red, you should be off the stage.
Yeah.
So if you're still going when you're in the red, know that you should have been done already.
Nice.
So you could use, I think that would be perfect for the House of Reps.
Yeah.
Green, yellow, red.
There's a few of us that could use it.
Yeah, how do you guys know when you're done? Because they have a certain amount of time. Because I've seen mics just get shut off in the middle of someone saying something.
Yeah, there are some debates that are timed. Right. So short debate, standard debate, then you can pretty much go on forever, and as you've seen some of us do.
Do you guys have like a stopwatch? Do you like, okay, I'm going to set myself...
The board actually has a timer on it. When they go into short debate, the speaker will say... 5 minutes or 2 minutes, and it counts down. Once it goes off, your mic goes off.
Yeah, so. It's fun to watch someone just keep talking while their mics. And they have them like on these like those bending mics, and you'll see them like just swing it back when they're mad that they didn't have more time. So that's the thing. Have you ever seen comics just like storm off stage after a bad set? I've seen comics like just drop the mic and just storm off.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of comics. I don't know. I feel like sometimes when they have a bad set, they don't realize it.
slight unaware comedian.
Yeah.
There's a lot of parallels here.
Yes, there are. There are some that, well, here, there's a couple of those. People who bomb and keep trying. Sometimes you have a bad, it's just going badly, and the harder you try, the worse it gets. It's like hitting the gas in the mud, you know, when you just kind of try to get out of the mud and you just like are just spinning your tires. Then there are people, like Kat said, that they have no idea that they're doing badly. They're completely oblivious. And then there are the ones that get really mad at the audience, mm-hmm. and they take it out on them, and they're belligerent.
Oh, yeah. You're just like, literally, this is like, ever. This is every day in the Florida House of Representatives. All three of those, right?
Yeah. It's
all
uncomfortable.
Three of those.
I think the hardest one to watch is a comic who just gets mad at the audience. Yeah. It's the most
uncomfortable
thing. I'll take oblivious and desperate at the end of the day.
The famous Michael Richards thing where he, right, isn't that,
yes,
where he
that would
mad
be
at the audience?
Well, that's somebody who also doesn't have much experience, although I've seen experienced comics get mad at the audience too, but that's from an inexperience of not being on stage and not having enough material to get out of that. And then we all come up with different styles for how to deal with either a bad audience or somebody who's being disruptive during a show. I mean, like, do you have a go-to? What do you do, Colleen?
I mean, I just, if a joke bombs, I call it out as a bombing joke. And typically, the audience is so relieved that I acknowledged
yes.
the joke bombed that they get on my side and they start laughing more.
Yeah, sometimes acknowledging it, and that can be dicey, but sometimes you're like, okay, it's not just us.
Yeah.
Okay, she knows.
Yeah.
She's totally in on it. All right.
Okay, we're all in on that.
Right,
I might say something like, the last time I heard booze like that, I tried leaving the house wearing leggings as pants. You know, like, okay, I get it. You know, well, let's move on.
Yeah,
that's fine. It happens.
Yeah, and Kat, as a sort of a setup punchline, this having, because you write tightly. I think the three of us are more storytellers, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
So I mean, like that can be a difficult. What do you do to address like someone who's being disruptive?
Usually, because I'm not really, like, I don't like to hurt people's feelings, so I feel like usually I'll like kind of ask nicely, and it kind of just works for
yes.
me. Like, if I just say nicely, like, oh, could you please stop talking or something,
yep.
like, I don't know, they tend to like it. However, if it is a place that's like has more of a rowdy crowd, it is kind of fun then sometimes to shut them down and to kind of make fun of them a little bit. But I only do that like if I wouldn't be like, you're ugly or something. Like, I wouldn't say something to hurt somebody's feelings, but, like, it is fun sometimes to kind of tear into them.
She just sounds nice. I just kind of, you know, tear into them.
It works for her. Tina, do it. It's great. Yeah.
Well, and you'll find more techniques, I think, as moms. Mm-hmm. You'll see that you improvise even more. And you know, because I think as a mom, what I found, there are a couple things. I was just doing a presentation for some high school students at SEN, and they asked me to do stand-up comedy and then talk about my career. But these kids were like, they didn't want to. Some of them didn't want to be there, or they weren't gonna. And the one kid was going ha 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 in the middle of my setups. So I was on a stage in their auditorium, so I came off the stage right up to him. I was like, hey, how's it going over here? And all of us were like, dude, she's right all up in here. And the other thing is that I'll tell audiences that are disruptive, like if one table is, I will walk off the stage into the audience and address a table and say, let me tell you something. When I write this material, I don't let my sons interrupt me. So you better believe I'm not going to let you interrupt me when I deliver it. And then then I was like, okay. Yeah. And that's one of those, and that's something I would never have done that before I was a mom. Those are the things that you find.
Yeah.
You find your best self when you're a mom.
Yes.
I think I do
feel like, you know, like I'm already getting ready to kind of, if somebody tries to touch my kid. Well, because he's going to be born in the middle of cold and flu season. So, like, I'm already getting ready to, like, swat people away and to, you know, be kind of protective. And so I feel like it is going to give me more, like, I do think that I'm going to become more, like, just more, like, stern with people in general, I think.
I hope so. I mean, you should. You should absolutely swat people away when they try to kiss your baby. There's no baby.
Yeah.
And Steve and I remember one time we were walking down, we were on Devon,
when that subway was by the on the same block as the Starbucks in Edgebrook, and the subway owner was outside, and he goes, "Let me hold your baby." And Steve and I still to this day are laughing because we're like, and then we gave him to the we handed him our baby. And we were like, yeah, we were like, okay. I know. I don't remember if it was me or Steve holding Griffin, but we were like, sure. It was the way he asked or something. Baby. Yeah, we'll just all stand here watching you hold our baby. And then we never did that again. We're like, okay. Yeah. More with our guests when we come back. The Momedians of Momedy on December 6th at Davenport's. Go to davenportspianobar.com for more ticket information. Any place else they should go?
Well, they can visit our Facebook page.
Mm-hmm. Momedians.
Momedy.
Yeah. Basically anything Momedians of Momedy. But there, if you go to davenportspianobar.com/Momedians of Momedy, it should take you directly to the ticket page. And you definitely want to purchase your tickets beforehand because we're going to sell this show out. Yes. So.
Excellent. Yeah. Well done. And Representative Martwick, when we come back, I want to find out more about how people can contact you too, because I think that one of the things that fascinates me still, all the conversations I've had over the last 3 years, is people calling and getting upset, and then and I ask them who their rep is, and they're like, well, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I had that tonight.
Yeah. Did you really?
I swear to God.
Let's talk about that when we come back on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio, hanging out with the Momedians of Momedy. They're going to be at Davenport's on December 6th. Go to davenportspianobar.com/Momedians. Or Momedy?
I think it's the whole Momedians of Momedy.
It'll be on their website.
You can go to the main page and click on calendar. And
excellent.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you my something good. I'm hanging out with my state rep. My something good is that I've gotten to know more about what Illinois politics is all about. And I know people are cynical and they get angry about what it means to have a government and how, you know, there's so many things to get frustrated about, but I think being more informed has made me feel more empowered. And the more that you have a conversation with the people who are responsible for what directly impacts you can make you feel better about things. I don't know how else to explain it, Rep.
No, I agree with you 100%. I mean, and you the more you engage, I mean, we're just regular old people. We're neighbors, right? We're neighbors. You and I are neighbors.
Yeah.
So it's like we're just regular old people. We decide to get involved. And the more that we converse with you and you converse with us, the more that communication is open, the more everybody learns, the better the process works. That's what it takes. It's amazing to me how people are so frustrated with the system, but then they don't really want to do anything about it. And you don't have to do a lot.
No.
Like you said, get a little informed, have a conversation. Tonight I was out helping a colleague. And I was knocking on doors, and I came to a young man's door, and he started asking me all these rather detailed questions. And because I knew my colleague, I was able to answer them for him. And at the end, he said, "Well, I don't want to sign his petition right now because I like to be well informed before I make decisions." And I thought to myself, "He's been your state representative for 4 years."
Yeah.
Right? If you want to be well-informed, it's not that hard.
You would already know what he's been doing in Springfield.
Yeah, exactly.
Or at least have some idea of where he stands on issues.
A little bit, right?
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit.
A little bit.
Do you guys know your state reps?
Yes. Because I was one of those schmucks who didn't know my state rep at one point. So now I do.
Who's your state rep?
Brad. Oh, wait. Yeah, right?
I don't know.
Oh, you're talking Congressman Brad Schneider?
No, yeah.
It's okay.
It's okay.
See, are you in Highland Park? It might
no.
be. No.
But I don't like to tell people where
no, I live. No, no, no. You're talking where
Lake
you live.
County.
It's okay. That's all right. If you go to openstates.org and type in your address, it'll give you the information about every single person, like whether it's your alderman or your state representative, your state senator, your congressman.
Okay.
It gives you all that information. Openstates.org is...
So I'm still a schmuck, but
you're not a schmuck. You're in the majority. It's okay. Yeah. Most people don't.
Everybody's
most people don't know.
Not our listeners. That's a lot of information. You guys, yeah. It was so much fun hanging out with you all.
Thank you to Colleen Brennan
and Denise Medina and Kat Herskovic in studio for Mommedians of Momedy on December 6th at Davenport. And thank you, Representative Martwick. Where can people find out more information about you?
Well, you can find me on Facebook, State Representative Robert Martwick, Twitter at Robert Martwick, and you can find me on my website at RobertMartwick.com.
And on New Year's Eve at the Filament Theater with Robert and the Representatives.
Robert and the Representatives.
And comedian Paul Farvar. I'll be hosting. We have a family show at 7:30, adult show to ring in the new year at 10 p.m.
Gonna be a blast.
It's gonna be so much fun. Go to Eventbrite and search.